the hardest part was actually to confess to yourself that you're gay. You know, in the Arabic society, I'm 26. Like, you know, it's wild that I'm still not married and I don't have a husband and tons of kids. I didn't know that it actually existed in my society.
You thought you were alone?
Yeah. Aswat, it means voices, actually, in Arabic. We decided to use that title because it's not one voice, we're voices.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. New Zealand queer unions get civilized, Canadian Supremes green light marriage equality, and Palestinian lesbians find their voices in Israel. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 11th, 2004. New Zealand gay and lesbian couples will be able to register civil unions in April, following the Parliament's final approval of the Labour government's bill this week with a conscience vote of 65 to 55. Passage followed 3 days of intense debate as the bill passed through both its committee stage and its third reading. Opponents proposed more than 70 amendments, but the potentially damaging ones were defeated, some by larger majorities than supported the bill itself. The final debate centered largely on whether or not the civil unions were actually so-called gay marriage, and whether or not that was a good thing. Some opponents referred to civil unions as gay marriage in drag. But the government clarified that while civil unions will be almost entirely equivalent to marriage in status, they differ in at least one substantive way. Like other unmarried couples in New Zealand, registered same-gender couples will not be allowed to adopt an unrelated child together. The final vote brought cheers from supporters in the galleries. Outside, about 200 supporters released balloons and danced to classic disco tunes, while a slightly larger number of opponents stood silent in protest. Brian Tamaki, whose Destiny Church members wore black in the face of what he called a tragedy, warned that while gays and lesbians may have seemingly won the battle, they haven't won the war. And in fact, the legislative battle will continue when the Relationships Statutory References Bill, the one that will give substance to civil unions by amending numerous existing laws that refer only to legal spouses, comes to the floor. Intended to be considered in company with the civil unions bill, it's been delayed as a parliamentary committee deals with the details.
The New Zealand proceedings were observed with envy from across the Tasman Sea by Australian marriage equality activists, whose own hopes for national recognition of their relationships were largely dashed by the recent electoral triumph of the Liberal Party and its coalition government. The group Australian Marriage Equality noted that New Zealand will extend civil union status to same-gender couples married in other countries, and that it would be easy for Australian gay and lesbian couples to move there for the recognition they're denied at home. Australian couples are currently facing two political challenges at the state level. South Australia is the only state which has not yet granted some legal status to same-gender couples, but the state government has advanced its relationships bill to change that. This week, South Australia's upper house voted for a committee inquiry into the bill. The state group Let's Get Equal feared this could be a means to stall the measure and organized 500 activists to deliver 24,000 letters to lawmakers. They're now reassured to find most upper house members support an expeditious process that will ensure the bill is back on the table early in the coming year.
But in West Australia, opposition leader Colin Barnett announced this week that if his Liberal Party takes power after upcoming state elections, they'll repeal recent reforms for equality. Just 2 years ago, under its current Australian Labor Party government, West Australia made a great legislative leap from having the nation's worst laws for gays and lesbians to having some of its best. But Barnett proposes to reinstate a higher age of consent for sex between men, albeit at 18 instead of the previous 21, compared to 16 for other sex partners. He wants to prohibit adoptions by same-gender couples and to deny fertility treatment to all unmarried women. He's even interested in ending all unmarried couples' access to family court for settling property disputes on dissolution. He denies any desire to discriminate, insisting he wants only to protect the institutions of marriage and family. Naturally, gay and lesbian activists responded with outrage, including a gay male couple who'd gained visibility as near winners on a reality TV show. Barnett backed off slightly, saying his party would not necessarily repeal the equality laws, but would review them. He may have been more moved by the leader of his coalition partner, the National Party, Max Trenorden, declaring the whole area a waste of time and not one in which his constituents had shown any interest. The group Pride West Australia is not at all reassured and is mounting a major Equality 2005 campaign against the Liberals to run through the state elections, which are expected to be held in February.
Canada's Liberal Party government will be introducing national marriage equality legislation next month, following the delivery this week of the long-awaited answers to its four questions to the Supreme Court of Canada. The High Court's response is only advisory, but carries tremendous influence. The court unanimously affirmed that federal lawmakers have the authority to extend the federal definition of marriage to include same-gender couples, that it would be constitutional to do so, and that clergy have the constitutional right to refuse to perform those marriages. Equally unanimously, the court offered a more complex reaction to the fourth question as to whether the current federal definition that excludes same-gender couples from marriage is constitutional. The court declined to respond to the question as posed on the grounds that a series of provincial court rulings have found that it is not, and the Canadian government has not only chosen not to appeal those rulings, but has clearly adopted that position as its own. The justices wrote, "Several centuries ago, it would have been understood that marriage be available only to opposite-sex couples. The recognition of same-sex marriage in several Canadian jurisdictions, as well as two European countries, belies the assertion that the same is true today."
These responses obviously open the door for lawmakers, but do not force them to take any action. Despite considerable dissent from the backbench of the ruling Liberal Party, Prime Minister Paul Martin affirmed that the government will introduce its bill. The vote could be close, as the largest opposition party, the Conservatives, oppose the move, while the smaller Bloc Québécois and New Democratic Party unanimously support it. But even if the federal bill should fail, the provincial and territorial legal rulings that have already opened marriage to 85% of Canada's same-gender couples would stand. The court's advisory has effectively deprived Alberta's staunchly conservative Premier Ralph Klein of almost every legal tool to block marriage equality, so looking to the political realm, he's calling for a national referendum on the issue. Even if that unusual step were taken, a late November poll found only about a quarter of Canadians entirely oppose marriage equality, compared to nearly 40% who support it, and about a third support near-equal civil standing for same-gender couples.
There's also been a big step forward for legal recognition for Israeli same-gender couples, as the nation's attorney general this week announced he's issued a directive to acknowledge gay and lesbian domestic partners as equivalent to unmarried heterosexual couples with respect to financial matters, including taxation and real estate. Menachem Mazuz is reversing the position of his conservative predecessor, who was determined to prevent state recognition of same-gender couples. Mazuz has chosen not to appeal a recent groundbreaking ruling by a Nazareth District Court, letting stand its finding that a gay man had the same status as a common-law spouse to inherit his deceased domestic partner's apartment. Lawmakers from two parliamentary parties welcomed the new policy, but one conservative rabbi warned, "Laws like these will bring the flood upon us."
The struggle for legal recognition of same-gender couples continues in the U.S. as well. This week, a New York State trial court rejected the major lawsuit seeking marriage equality there, as Judge Joseph Teresi found that denying marriage to gay and lesbian couples is allowed under the New York State Constitution. The American Civil Liberties Union plans to appeal that ruling on behalf of the 13 plaintiff couples.
The similar lawsuit in New Jersey, brought by Lambda Legal on behalf of seven gay and lesbian couples, was argued before a state appeals court this week. Regardless of the outcome, it's inevitable that the case will be appealed to the New Jersey State Supreme Court, which may well hear it in the coming year. Two more marriage equality lawsuits will be considered together by the Washington State Supreme Court in March. It was announced this week.
On the first day of California's new legislative session, openly gay State Democratic Assembly member Mark Leno reintroduced his bill for marriage equality. But also introduced this week by Republican State Senator Bill Morrow at the urging of the Traditional Values Coalition was a proposal to amend the state constitution to define marriage solely as between a man and a woman. The Traditional Values Coalition is also campaigning to downgrade the benefits of California's registered domestic partnerships, which as of January 1st will become the second strongest in the nation.
And finally, an Indian lesbian couple known as Raju and Mala eloped 2 weeks ago and this week celebrated a Hindu wedding in Chandragarh, the capital of Punjab. When they returned to their home in the Sikh holy city of Amritsar, they faced strong objections from their families and neighbors, but stood firm in their intention to live together. Mala's father demanded that police intervene, and officers reluctantly brought the couple before a city magistrate. The magistrate dismissed the case as police admitted they could not come up with a law to use against the women. In the wake of that dismissal, the families have abandoned their demands the women separate. The couple say they'd rather die than be parted and have vowed they'll fight for legal recognition of their marriage.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 11th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
For your last-minute holiday gift-giving and or year-ending U.S. tax deduction consideration. For the past few months, we've been telling you about three special 2003 year-in-review CDs, which are still available. We also want to remind you of two other CDs you can own that chronicle what this year is the 25th anniversary of two pivotal events in queer history.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan
White has been found guilty of one count each of voluntary manslaughter.
From the shocking San Francisco assassinations to the assassin's suicide, Diminished Capacity includes riveting on-scene coverage of the May 1979 White Night Riots, which many described as the Second Stonewall Rebellion. And from the planning to the bumps along the road to the event itself and the numbers game aftermath, the October 1979 and first ever National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights.
We can get our sisters and brothers on the streets of Washington saying that we're gay, we're proud, we're strong, and this year is the year.
If I have to walk on my hands to Washington, I'm going to be there.
The power of God is against you, Dale. We don't appreciate you being here.
We are everywhere.
It's just a huge smorgasbord of humanity. You wouldn't know how many people were gay until you took a look at this march.
Disturbed me was to pick up a Washington Post and see 25,000 and pick up a New York Times and see 75,000 and listen to the local news that said 125,000. I think we have to teach straight people how to count.
For information about all of our specially produced CDs for your queer history and culture collection, please visit our website at www.thiswayout.org. Throughout the Muslim world, homosexuality is a taboo, punishable in several countries by death. In the Palestinian-occupied territories, men and women who have consensual adult sex with members of the same gender are frequent victims of violence, committed by the authorities or even by their own families. Some flee to Israel, where they're illegal and ineligible for asylum. In a report last week, Radio Netherlands correspondent Eric Boschemann profiled these Palestinians in limbo, including a young gay victim of torture and abuse at the hands of the Palestinian Authority. This time he talks with Cindy, a 26-year-old Palestinian lesbian living in Israel. For Cindy and others like her, self-acceptance has been even more difficult in such a tumultuous and hostile environment.
My best friend, she told me that she had a crush on me. And that was when I was like, I think, 20. I didn't understand it. I couldn't even deal with what she was saying. And the whole time I was just trying to explain to her that she was just confused. It's because we're best friends. It's because we really care about each other. No, no, I don't think so, blah, blah, blah. And then after a while, I found myself having same feelings for her, and this is how it started. It lasted for a year.
You actually began a relationship with her?
It was a terrible one, I have to admit, because it was her first time and it was my first time. It was really, really hard for both of us. The hardest part was actually to confess to yourself that you're gay. That was the hardest part, which we didn't do during that year, and that was what was really hard about it, because we kept saying, no, we're not, it's just feelings that we have only for each other. And that was partly me saying that all the time to myself. It's just because she's my best friend, it's because I love her. And after her, I actually didn't have anybody for a whole year. I started going out with boys, trying to convince myself it was just a stage of my life that I don't want to think about anymore. But then I will.
At that time, did you talk with anybody else about this?
There's one person in my family that actually knows about me, which is my cousin. She's a year and a half younger than me. And she only found out about that because she was a really good friend of my first girlfriend. One night, the three of us, like, we were sharing a room, and she kind of caught us in the act. It was a terrible shock for her, but then I explained everything and she understood, and now she's, I think, the only person in my society or from my family that I can actually talk to her about it.
It would simply be impossible for you to talk to anybody else.
Tell me who and I will.
What do you think would be your family's reaction if they found out?
I can't even imagine. Like, my mom, until now, every time we talk on the phone or I visit, you know, in the Arabic society, I'm 26. Like, you know, it's wow that I'm still not married and I don't have a husband and tons of kids. And my mom is still hoping that I will actually get married in the end. I will have kids and I will get married and have a house of my own and, you know, start a family. Basically, what I'm afraid of is just breaking their hearts. If someone can tell me and reassure me that it won't break their hearts, I would do it gladly. It would actually make my life a lot easier.
Do you think that they would understand if you were to tell them? I mean, in a very cautious way and perhaps very slowly, but do you think that they would eventually understand?
No, I don't think so. It's against everything they believed in for, like, what, 50 years? Everything, socially, culturally, even religious-wise. It's against everything.
What type of family do you have? Are they middle-class people? Are they intellectuals? Poor? What are they like?
I would consider them as middle-class. I mean, they're both educated. They both graduated from universities. But at the same time, I mean, even that, you can't use it. They are open-minded, and I promise you, I'm probably one of the few girls who were able to move out of their parents' houses, live on their own, with the acceptance of their family, without being kicked out or something, without being abandoned or something. My family understood that it was time for me to move on with my life, that I wanted to start a life on my own. They didn't like it. They still don't, but they do understand it. But at the same time, coming to them with this topic would actually ruin their lives. So that's what I'm basically afraid of.
Do you think that they suspect something?
Gay-wise? No. That's the sad side. They don't. I mean, I feel guilty every time I brought a girlfriend to the house, introducing her to my family as my friend. Actually, I have to admit, it's easier having girlfriends in my society because it's normal. Of course you're having girlfriends. You're not supposed to have boyfriends anyway. So it was funny, but sad.
Do you have Palestinian girlfriends, or are they Israelis?
My first girlfriend was Palestinian, as I said, she was my best friend. But after that, no, all the girls after that were Israelis.
Because it's too complicated with the Palestinian?
No, because she was the only one I knew that she was gay. I didn't know that it actually existed in my society.
You thought you were alone?
Yeah, yeah. And even if there are anybody like me in my society, how can you tell, you know? They're all way inside the closet. Even, like, physical appearance-wise, they would just keep it, you know, as a girl with long hair and act like a girl with dresses and makeup and blah, blah, blah. You know, just to stay inside the closet. You won't be able to tell. And you can't just go to a girl and say, hey, are you gay? Want to go out with me? You know, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really easy for me just to go out with Israelis.
Tell me about the group that you're involved in.
There is a place in Jerusalem that is called the Open House. It's where everybody can go for gays, lesbians, trans, whatever. It has a library, you can use the internet, a coffee shop. It's everything. It's for both Israelis and Palestinians, but of course it's inside of Israel. It was only by chance that I found out about this place. I went and visited the place. It was very comfy and I felt like, you know, it's like somewhere I can be myself. Anyway, there's A girl who works there, who's now from Aswat as well.
What's Aswat?
Aswat, it means voices, actually, in Arabic. We decided to use that title because it's not one voice, we're voices. And she told me about this group. It didn't have a name yet. She said that there are like other girls from our society that wanted to start a, you know, just an email list. You know, you don't have to see them. You don't have to say anything that you don't want to say. Just, you know, write emails, share experiences, talk about each other's lives. I was like, you know, as long as it was anonymous, why not? So this is how it started. It lasted for like 8 months, if I'm not mistaken. Then it was like, you know, let's meet. Let's see each other. We want to see each other's faces. We want to stick the name to the face. And this is how it started. It was the first meeting, then the second, then the third, and now we're Aswat.
How many women are involved?
Now we're 14, thank God. We got two more new members a couple of months ago, actually.
And these are all women from Jerusalem and the Jerusalem area?
No. Jerusalem, Haifa, Tel Aviv, Nazareth, from all across. Mm-hmm. So.
But you don't have any actual members from the West Bank or from Gaza?
I think it will be impossible to. I mean, we don't. We would love to, actually. It would have been amazing. But one of the rules, actually, for getting in the Aswat group is for one member to know the new member. We can't get anybody in, you know, because we're all inside the closet. We have only one member that is actually out, which is Rauda. It could be really dangerous for us if anybody, like the wrong people, knew about us. So, no, we don't have anybody from the West Bank. We're trying to extend, actually, our work and our projects. Maybe we can reach out for those girls, and hopefully one day one of the girls from there would actually give us a call or send us an email.
Do you have any idea how difficult it is to be lesbian in the occupied territories?
I lived there for 25 years. Trust me, I do.
But, I mean, you say you were born in and raised in Jerusalem, so that's...
I was born in Jerusalem. I lived there for until I was, I think, 11 or 10. I grew up inside the territories. Yeah, I know exactly how it feels like to be gay and to live inside the territories in the West Bank. It's horrible.
Why is it horrible?
It's horrible just being a Palestinian and live inside the West Bank. Think about it when you're Palestinian and gay inside the West Bank. It's just horrible, you know. Life is really, really hard. Moving from one place to another, you have to plan it a day before and know how you're going, know how you're going to get back, know if tomorrow is going to be a curfew or a closure, if it's okay, if there's no trouble on the street. It was really hard. It takes such patience just to be able to live there.
And as a lesbian?
As a lesbian, the way people look at you, it's different. Like when I started shaving my head or cutting it really short or just dressing up like a guy. Not that I was like, you know, I promise I wasn't like doing it like on purpose, but it was part of who I am, you know. I don't know. Some people say that I was just imitating the West or like my mom always tell me. But it's just what I was, how I felt comfortable. Like, you know, just, I don't know. I'm not trying to be a guy, but at the same time, this is how I feel comfortable, you know, not too girly.
And how did people look at you when they saw you?
Some people call me Israeli or start talking to me in Hebrew or in English or call me names or call me a guy or it's like, hey, boy, or whatever. Just, you know, made fun of me. The thing is, I don't think even the word gay or lesbian exists in my society. That's why I've never been, like, in a situation where somebody, you know, call me gay or queer or whatever in my society. Not yet.
So they wouldn't even think of something like lesbian?
No, that's why I feel safe with my parents as well, because I think no matter what I do, they won't suspect that I'm gay or lesbian, or that I'm acting like this or wearing like that, or my hair is like that, it's because I'm gay or lesbian or whatever. They think I'm a tomboy. That's it.
Do you think that it's actually possible to change your society's attitudes towards gays and lesbians?
Oh, it's really hard. I don't think so, no. It's such a strict, very traditional, conventional, religious society. And being occupied makes it worse because, you know, when you're afraid and when nothing is sure in your life, you tend to run back to religion, and religion makes people even more strict about things. I don't think it's possible to make them a bit easier or more open-mind about this. No, at least not for the coming 10, 15 years. I'm not very optimistic about that. But at least we can reach out for those women who are crying for such an organization where they can actually feel comfortable, they feel right at home, and this is how we feel together.
Does it make you sad that it's going to take so long for things to change, if they do change? Or are you simply resigned to it?
It is sad, but at the same time, we have to be smart. I mean, it can never change overnight, even if we wished for it, even if it was even by a miracle. It's so hard to change someone's mind when he or she was brought up to believe in a certain way and feel in a certain way. It took me a whole year, 2 years, if I can say, just to understand that I was actually gay, to confess it, to admit it to myself. You know, yes, I might be gay. You know, I have feelings for girls. I don't know what that is, but whatever, you know, I accept it. I know it's going to take a long time, but it's not only about the issue of gays and lesbians. It's everything. Everything takes a long time. Things have to take their way of resolving, you know. I know someday, one of these days, it will happen. We're just waiting.
That was Cindy, a Palestinian lesbian living in Israel, interviewed by Radio Netherlands reporter Eric Boschemann. And now, here's a preview of two very special This Way Out programs to help us ring out the old and ring in the new.
How do you greet the day with sunshine in your eyes and a smile that seems to say, hey, it's okay.
From the courthouses in Massachusetts to the San Francisco City Hall, voices of our communities rang with joy and triumph in 2004. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. GLBT musicians joined that chorus and we'll feature our favorites on the Audiophile 2004 Year in Review coming the last week of December here on This Way Out.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride.
I was gratified by Richard's interest in seeing me in drag.
The issues that people during the Harlem Renaissance were dealing with.
For the record, it's not a self-diagnosed disorder.
I think a lot of times what happens with lesbian movies is there's been a trend to have them be a little bit more serious.
The first report that said that 1 in 10 men had had a significant homosexual relationship or encounter.
Join me for a special This Way Out when we look at Pride on Screen in 2004.
That's Audiophile Year in Review 2004 and Pride on Screen 2004, two very special editions of This Way Out, each coming soon to an audio channel near you. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Eric Boschemann contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is primarily supported by tax-deductible charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. It's you, our listeners, who keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs as a bonus. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org. Or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We wish you the happiest of holidays and thank you for listening on KRCC Colorado Springs, Colorado, 5KIX Kangaroo Island, South Australia, WRUW Cleveland, Ohio, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.